Hey, HD101 fans, I want you to know that we're crowdfunding a brand new, gorgeously printed hardcover book covering 101 weird, obscure, historically important, and just plain cool Japanese video games. It's going to be called Hardcore Gaming 101 Presents Japanese Video Game Obscurities, but we can only put it out with your pledge. So check out hardcoregaming101.net. The link should be pretty much close to the top of the page. Japanese Video Game Obscurities. If we get to do this, it's going to be our best looking book yet, and it's one of those books that it'll be about stuff you've probably never heard of. In fact, I can almost guarantee you won't have heard of almost all of it. So give a hoot, fund our book, $15 for the PDF, $20 plus shipping for the hardcover. Do it!
Episode 68 of HardcoreGaming101.net's Top 47,858 Games of All Time podcast, where we objectively, definitively, and scientifically rank the games you nominate. My name is Carl, and I'm the real Third Energy. My panelists today are...
I'm Bobinator.
I'm Satanga.
And our good friend Xerxes is lost in time, so we are doing this El Mano, El Mano, El Mano? That goes?
Three Amigos!
Right,
Starring Chevy Chase, Martin Short, and... Oh god, who's the third guy?
Parrot?
Steve Martin! It was Steve Martin, shook.
On this podcast, we have three rules. Rule number one, all rankings are final, official, and scientifically accurate. Rule number two, you can nominate one game via a five-star review on iTunes or Stitcher. We've stopped accepting nominations via Twitter for the foreseeable future. Rule number three, you can nominate games that have already been nominated, but don't nominate games we've already ranked. You can see the master list for yourself. Check out bit.ly/47kgames. And our next game is Power Stone. It was nominated to us by Hoosier Dave Zero on Twitter, I believe. It was developed by Capcom. It was published by Capcom. Its platform was the arcade and the Dreamcast. And I believe the earliest release date in territory was February 25th, 1999 in Japan. And as these things go, it was an arcade game, so who freaking knows exactly when that date was accurate. But I guess that's the official date, or it's the Dreamcast release date.
I think it's Dreamcast release date, because I do not have any idea what the arcade release date was, and I doubt anyone else does either. Feel free to let us know if you know, though.
If you're like, hey, I actually played this game at its first test location in December 1998 in Japan, well, that would be great to know. So Power Stone is Capcom's, one of their, I think, many, many attempts to revitalize or capitalize on a new fighting game market, because, you know, Capcom, you know, they own Street Fighter, you know, they kind of a big game, kind of a big deal, but they weren't willing to rest on their haunches, especially kind of in the 90s. They really did keep trying to get the next Street Fighter. I think they tried to really get the next big fighting game. And
I mean, they had Darkstalkers, they had Saturday Night Slam Masters, they had Rival Schools, Cyberbots and Techromancer, all that stuff.
Look at this guy.
Don't forget Star Gladiator, because I bet everyone else did.
Got Star.
I sure did. Just forget Star Gladiator.
Star Gladiator's pretty neat. I like that one.
It's got a good, ambience, so I'm not sure I like how it
But Power Stone is one of their more, I guess, divergent games. It's a 3D arena fighter style thing. It's not, you're not fixed against each other. You can run around the arena, and you just sort of pick up random items in the arena and throw them and use them against each other. And if it sounds suspiciously like another game from around this time, you're right, but not really, because interestingly, this game was basically released alongside Super Smash Bros. So it kind of feels like a really alternate take on that sort of idea.
I wonder if either of them were influenced by the other. That'd be a very interesting question.
It feels like more like they both looked at something. I don't know when Poi Poi came out, but kind of a little bit like Poi Poi, a little bit of Virtual On. There's like these other little games that kind of bled into these ideas.
This is probably like most, I'd say, creative Capcom's fighting games, and actually probably the most approachable. You've got a jump button, you've got two attack buttons, and I believe a button for picking things up. But the big thing that makes it different from so many other fighting games is that you have full movement of the 3D arena.
Yes.
You are free to move in any direction you want. What else is there?
There's the titular Power Stones. That's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, you could say that.
I wanted to say that the sort of feel of movement almost makes it feel like you're fighting a boss in a 3D beat-em-up, like Spike Out or something like that. That's the main distinguishing factor it's got apart from Smash, and I just appreciate how the controls feel relatively simple. I mean, this it may not be the most technical game on the planet, but actually, you know, I don't have to worry about one frame links or some BS.
There are a lot of mechanics in this game. The problem is the game didn't really tell you about them very well.
Yeah, you've got like some grapples, some throw mechanics, you've got counter, like dodge mechanics. You got a lot of little bits and pieces in this game that it's not super interested in telling you. And it's part of its arcade pedigree, I think, is the game doesn't really care.
If it were an SNK game, it probably would have told you about this stuff right away, but...
Yeah, it's a very easy game to get into, as you said. It is incredibly accessible, because even though it has advanced stuff, for the most part, you really can just get away with running and jumping and punching and air dive kicking your opponent. And the big thing that you want to do that keeps this game moving is that there are three power stones. Both characters start with one, and there is a third one strewn around the arena. And your goal is to collect all three. If you manage to collect all three and to get them out of your opponent, you can hit them with various attacks or items and certain things to make it easier to knock the power stones out, then your character goes into a super mode. And it is a very cool super mode. This isn't some lame, your character gets palette shifted to red or they get like a glowing ambience or something. No, they become a completely different like character visually.
It's a full-on Power Rangers or Super Sentai transformation, and usually some sort of like colorful robotics sort of alter ego.
Right,
and I just want to say, I really do like the character designs of this game all around. I mean, you know, you got your samurai, you got your Native American.
What you have is you have the Japanese approach to multiculturalism, which is vaguely racist in some ways, but...
I thought Street Fighter was bad about stereotypes. This is like a whole new level, to be honest.
Yeah, Galuda and Rouge are maybe a little too indicative of their nationalities, and I don't know, just something about the name Wang Tang feels off somehow.
I always like to get some Wang Tang, you know. That's what I'm for.
Everybody Wang Tang tonight. I had to go there. I'm sorry for
that. I mean, that, yeah, like, there is... The game doesn't rub its face in you about that because it's very lighthearted. It's not... The characters barely say or do anything. They each have their own little ending, but otherwise, there isn't even, you know, like if you, some of the Street Fighter games or later games, and a lot of fighting games, you know, characters will, you know, they'll actually talk to each other, like, you killed my dad, I'm gonna beat the hell out of you. I'll kill you too. The characters don't say anything to each other, really. The game's just like, they just step out and it's like, I gotta beat this guy. Well, I'm gonna beat that guy. And then the game starts.
There's really not much of a plot, but everybody wants power stones. There's also a bad guy who wants power stones, and that's kind of it.
Right. Mm-hmm. And if you assemble, I think the plot is like there's some sort of like ultimate power stone or something that you can get somehow. And if you do that, then you get like a wish granted, I think is the premise. That's the only thing I didn't bother to recheck because the plot doesn't matter in the slightest.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Chaos Emeralds, but there's only like half of them. Oh, did we mention yet, besides the stones, you can also get various weapons in from treasure chests, as well as, like, food items and whatever. And also that every stage has, like, crates or whatever you can toss at the opponent. But then you can also get, like, iron pipes and pistols. I think a rocket launcher, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, there's a rocket launcher. It's one of the better weapons.
The stages are pretty cool, too, because a lot of them have, like, special things, like poles you can grab on and climb around on. You can use some attack by swinging around on them. Some of the stages have hazards. Those are really fun.
Right. There's a lot going on. This game is a full production budget game. It feels really nice and complete. It's a very good package. It's a solid arcade game. It's well worth your time in that regard. It is... I'm not going to be super secretive about this. I really like Power Stone. It's one of my favorite fighting games.
I grew up playing this one, yeah. And, of course, you know, I had a very spot-on Dreamcast port, which is that was my jam back in the day, yo.
The Dreamcast port is crazy because, obviously, this is a Naomi hardware game, so the Dreamcast port is basically the arcade game, but slightly better. You can play as the bosses, and there's a... I think there's some unlockable weapons that you don't get in the arcade. There's, like, an extendable stick, a chain gun, I think, a couple other items, maybe.
Yeah, I like the stick, the Ryu Jinguvang or whatever.
Yeah, it's the Monkey King's extendable rod.
Yeah, that's the one.
It is, like, a really nice package, and it's a great Dreamcast game to have if you had a Dreamcast when it was available on the Dreamcast. This was a great game to have for it. It hasn't received much attention. There was a PSP port with its sequel, and some minor upgrades, you know, way after. Literally the worst platform, right?
It really was.
Yeah.
And, of course, because no one wanted it, Capcom said, oh, I guess no one's Power Stone, I guess we're just going to cancel it forever.
Wow, people don't want Power Stone on a handheld. Well, let's not put a 360 release out there.
I don't know how much we want to talk about it, but the game did at least get a sequel.
The game got a sequel because I think it was mildly popular. It didn't set, like, sales records or anything, but they gave it a fully featured sequel, which we don't get to talk about.
Sure. Cal is right, this got a sequel, but this game, I don't know what it was, but, like, so many licenses took this game's template and used it for themselves, usually very poorly. Like, I never had this game growing up, but I did have Powerpuff Girls Chemical Extraction, which is basically Power Stone if it's worse in about every possible way.
I really don't like the name Powerpuff Girls Chemical Extraction. That doesn't, something about that name doesn't sit right with me. It's kind of weird.
There was also a Tom and Jerry game that was basically the same that I also had. I guess this is, like, a very approachable way to do a fighting game, which makes it easier to make into a fighting game than your typical Street Fighter-styled fighter.
And there was a couple other, I think one of the later God of War games very much had, like, a Power Stone-inspired mode.
Well, you know, if we're going to discuss Power Stone, Power Clones, if you will, we do have to obligatorily say that the best licensed version of this is Shrek Super Slam.
That's probably Power Stone 2, so I'm a little... Wouldn't quite lump it in with the rest of the games I mentioned.
Okay. Someone has one attack button to it. Okay.
Definitely gonna have to bring that up when and if we discuss Power Stone 2, though.
Yeah, so we have to talk about Power Stone 1, which I think is marginally better as a 1-versus-1 game than its sequel.
I do like the first game a little better, because Power Stone 2 is a lot of fun, don't get me wrong, but it's a bit too chaotic and a bit too hard to tell what's going on.
I think Power Stone 2, for me, is a better game. I just really do wish that Power Stone 1... had the opportunity to be more refined. I think this game was most of the way there, and that's very impressive for a 3D arena fighting game. And then Power Stone 2, they're like, let's actually make a pretty different game.
This is the exact same thing with Bushido Blade, come to think of it.
Right, that is getting closer, where they stripped out a bit of the core that made this one really nice to play, and then they replaced it with other things which made the sequel nice to play, but they're different things, and that's like,
I usually prefer to have more attack buttons when necessary, so... but then again, I did play 2 more because of it had a lot of items to get in and it had more replay.
The items are a lot better in 2, and there's more characters, and they're kind of... It's a bit more interesting, and there's all these bits, but the Power Stone 1 is a great game, and the balance is better in Power Stone 1, I would say. Okay, so...
I did just want to mention 3 little odd bits and bops here and there. One, my personal favorite character is Jack... Who's basically this game's take on Jack the Ripper, but he's also a mummy somehow. Who thought of that idea?
He
is stage is like an abandoned
creepy.
Toy store.
Yeah, I mean, I'm
very
pretty sure his ending
is
like literally
freak.
Off to murder some women. Then,
oh my god,
I'm pretty sure that's his ending. Like he just wants a Power Stone.
Yeah,
to, like
very unsubtle for a bright and colorful game. That's pretty disturbing. Well, then again, you know, Final Valgus is also pretty.
Final Valgus is like. It's a classic body horror that you expect from a game of this period. Just like this gross monstrosity. Kind of looks like a mix of the nuclear horrible soldier in Nausicaa blended with the ending of Society. And that's kind of the two bits and pieces kind of shoved together. Yeah, I know what I'm doing.
Yeah, also I want to know that like in the latter 90s, Capcom was really, really big on gigantic bosses. You know, because they had Apocalypse and Onslaught and the... Marvel series and
I'm glad this game has a proper final boss. It makes the game feel a bit more rounded.
Me too.
It really works.
It makes it feel more complete than Street Fighter V. I just want to say 2 more things really quick, just to odds and ends. One, I like how Ryoma's power version is a complete ripoff of the Silver Samurai. Like it's all, like they. I know that Capcom had the X-Men license, and Silver Samurai was a character in Children of the Atom, but I don't know. I just find.
Well, Wang Tang is clearly Goku. There is like no ifs
buts about
that.
He's just
Goku.
And B, the de facto main character of the game, Falcon, was known as Fokker in other localities. I guess they had to change that because people thought they'd do kind of like a Pac-Man thing with his name or whatever.
Well, also Falcon is basically the correct way to translate that into English.
That's another good point. It's a pragmatic change. So, I just found that amusing. Okay, sorry.
How about between Super Meat Boy and Oregon Trail? That'd be number 39.
Yeah, I mean, that's not a bad placement. The... Power Stone is a tough one because it's not nearly as popular as it deserves to be, and I will pretty much fight anyone who says otherwise. But it's really hard to find issues with this game, you know? Like, it is really well put together, and it just needed a, like, decent revision, and then it would have been an all-time classic. I do think that you are about right there, because the real thing that I think is important about this game is that developers keep going back to this game, and I think developers know there's something in this game. But it's so hard. It doesn't sell to people. It just, they don't do it. And it's really crazy, but...
I really hope Combat Core ends up good, that early access game on Steam.
It's not shaping up great at the moment, but maybe it'll get better. Hopefully it will. I really hope that this kind of game, like, I really want someone to take this game and give us one that is, like, unquestionably straight at the top of our list, basically. Like, and it's so possible to do. I love Power Stone, and I think that it's actually really... The Power Stone mechanic is genius. It ensures that you can't turtle, because if you turtle, then they grab the Power Stones,
that's a really good
and then they kick your ass. And that's really cool. And I think that's one thing that sets this way apart from other arena fighting games, because almost all of them are just based around smacking people in the face. And, you know, if you run around and just spam abilities or whatever, it kind of works better than trying to get down and dirty. Whereas in this game, it constantly clashes you together because it wants you to get those Power Stones. I think that's a... I just wanted to talk a little about why I like Power Stone, trying to justify that it should be that high. It really is. If you haven't played it, you need to, is my opinion on that one.
Well, I love this game too. I've played it quite a while ago. It's definitely a childhood favorite. Although, I do have to say, you guys are willing to place this way above Marvel vs. Capcom 2?
I like this game more than Marvel 2, I'm not gonna lie.
I do too as well, but that far above?
Well, that's
like a really giant gap.
That's a, like, triple agreement that we all like the game a lot.
Well, but yeah.
I guess the thing is, Power Stone is, you know, this game, I won't say it came out of nowhere, but they did a remarkable job on this one. You know, I think this game saw the problems with arena-based fighting games and just went, we'll fix them all. And then they did. And it's so charming visually.
How many arena-based fighting games were there before this, though, is something?
Oh, there was, like, Virtual On, which, you know, that counts. I'm pretty sure there was an entry in the Poi Poi franchise. I don't think Distraga was out at this point. I think there's a Saturn game buried in there somewhere. If you can count the Outfoxies, if you like. I mean, I know it's 2D, but it's trying to get there. And I think that there's a couple of games that you can kind of look at. Maybe, I know Balls is kind of stupid, but even Balls has this free roaming environment to it that, you know, it's kind of getting there, you know. You can see where their various ideas are sort of being pursued.
Just to be honest, though, it really should go above Marvel 2, at least somewhat.
I think so, too. I'll definitely give it that, but I feel a little uncomfortable spiking it this high, to be honest. I just want to keep things in check.
Yeah, that's fine. Can you argue it down? I want to hear, like, I don't want to put you as devil's advocate, but since you've decided to be, can you?
Well, I think it could use more characters. I mean, the characters there are good as they are, but, you know, only 8 for a game in, like, 98, 99 is kind of behind the times at that point, I'll be honest.
I know, it's kind of tricky because, obviously, every character is actually 2 characters, given that they get kind of a new ability and look to them.
Even so, 16 is still not a lot. Well, then again, I say that, and then, like, one of my favorite fighting games around this time, Last Blade 2, has 16 characters in it, so maybe I should...
I mean, like, technically, I think the home port, you do get the 2 bosses. I don't know if the Valgus is... I think he's rebalanced for multiplayer, I think. I honestly can't remember, but I thought he was.
Yeah, him and the sub-boss, Kraken.
So, you know...
I'm a pirate.
There, you know, there are little bits and pieces. They do have basically 10 characters. I know that's not
10 characters, but... yeah. No, I should mention that.
I guess the thing is, I can't think of an arena fighting game that's better than this one.
It pretty much is the definitive version of this type of game, and I'm not sure if anything's really pulled off the formula as succinctly as it has. I'm just wondering if we should be comparing this at all on a similar wavelength to 2D fighters and the like, or if you guys feel that this game is on a completely different wavelength and more
maybe closer to Bushido Blade, it's more accurate.
It's way better than Bushido Blade.
No, that's perfect. I would
say definitely better than Bushido Blade.
I'd rate it higher than Bushido Blade. We have that down at 88. Okay, in that case, here, let me consider this. So if I were to put it above it somewhere, okay.
So, better than Shenmue.
Oh yes, definitely.
This game is really good. I think it's great.
And how about between Yakuza and Yiz?
I can't really argue with that. It's not too far away from the fighters below it, but it's definitely a fair chunk higher than to reflect how original the game itself is, and I...
Okay, so one of the things about this game is that, a little like Bushido Blade, but not quite, it's so accessible, and it still functions as a fantastic fighting game. You know,
it still holds up well today, true.
Yeah, and that's, you know, again, that's the, you know, God Hand is nice. It's a nice game. We looked at it. But I think that this game, it handles itself better as a... mechanically, I think it handles itself better, because God Hand mostly is about mashing buttons. I know there's strategy.
As much as I like God Hand, I admit that not everyone's going to get used to it. It's got a pretty steep curve, and Power Stone's a lot more accessible. So if you wanted to say between Ikaruga and God Hand, I'm cool with that. Do you have a case to put it even higher?
I am willing to stomp Power Stone's march forward at Ikaruga. Only.
That's fine.
Only because Ikaruga is a very similar game in that it was a Dreamcast game, and it is one of these Dreamcast classics. I know it says arcade game as well, but you know, these games are both heavy hitters on the Dreamcast.
I'm kind of wondering if you should go above Blue Stinger, if that'd be too high.
I don't know if we can put it above Blue Stinger, even though we wanted to, but if we do...
We're going to get chewed out by Xerxes if we do that. I know he's not on here right now, but...
But I'll sell below Ikaruga, that's fine too.
I guess what I'll say is, I think Power Stone is probably the best exploration of arena-based fighters without being something else. You know, I mentioned Virtualon, and Virtualon is phenomenal, and I might even put it above Power Stone. But...
Possibly.
It's a very interesting game in its own regard. This one is a single-screen game, and I think that's very important. It doesn't require two massive screens and two custom joysticks to feel right. It's... works perfectly in the home. It works perfectly on one screen. It is really a fantastic little game. And we didn't put it higher, but maybe I'll say it's tough because this game did impact a little bit of gaming. But maybe it's actually a bad thing because none of those games are good, really. Like, none of those games. People took the wrong message from this game. Get it together.
A bad trend. Only Capcom could make something quite like it, and they even didn't do that with Power Stone 2. And they're probably not going to make anything as cool as that ever again at this point, so...
If we revisit Power Stone, I might potentially try and argue Power Stone 2 higher. So I'm going to lock this in at 80, okay. And we'll just see how it goes. If you love Power Stone, let us know, because everyone should love Power Stone.
I agree with that.
Or for me.
Hello everyone, Jeff the Electric Viking here. You might remember me as the biggest Super Scalar fan in the world, or perhaps as the resident Bad at Games guy. Nevertheless, I've had the good fortune of working with the HD101 gang for over a year now, and I have a stake in seeing the outfit continue to move from strength to strength, and that's where you come in. I would humbly ask that you consider a small monthly contribution to HD101 on Patreon. Your money funds paid writing on the video games that you love, helps fund this show, and on top of that you'll gain access to an add-on version of the HD101 podcast, with bonus content every week. All of this can be had for the price of a coffee, beer, or whatever the hell it is you drink in your corner of the world. Thanks for your consideration. And remember, be sure to have your pets spayed or neutered.
And our next game is Dino Crisis. It's a crisis of dinosaurs. Nominated by OK USA on iTunes, and I think it was also requested on Twitter by @PattleMurray. This game was developed by Capcom and published by Capcom. The platform, we're going to go... I think we played the PlayStation version, but I believe there is a PC port and a Dreamcast port, if I remember my Dino Crisis correctly. Its earliest release date and territory was July 1st, 1999 in Japan. And this is a game that features some dinosaurs and some sort of crisis. I think the crisis is a lack of dinosaurs.
I don't know if anybody wanted to go into the plot for this.
I don't know if you count this as a flaw, but Cal doesn't like games where you have to hurt dogs, and that's, you know, totally understandable. I don't want to hurt dinosaurs because dinosaurs are awesome.
I think that's always been the inherent flaw of this series, and although I will say, you know, I'll say this before people think I'm going to be negative, I love Dino Crisis, the game. But I think it's an inherent flaw that with movies like Jurassic Park and that movie The Land Before Time, I think it's called, with the other dinosaurs, there's a lot of media that's like, dinosaurs are great and you're friends. So when you have a game that's basically, watch out for dinosaurs, they're going to murder the hell out of you, so you got to shoot them first. I think that psychologically some people immediately like, Oh, I don't know. I'd rather shoot people. Which, of course, is a weird thing that I'm not really going to try and get into, but it's interesting. And you don't get a dinosaur friend in this. Sorry, everyone. You don't meet some dinosaur and make it your friend and then it helps you. No, you basically just have to shoot dinosaurs in this game. You shoot big dinosaurs. You shoot little dinosaurs. You try and probably fail to shoot flying dinosaurs because those sons of bitches are so hard to hit. My goodness, they were hard to shoot. I didn't bother. I just ran away from them. So yeah, this game is a game that you would think... You'd think this game would have been set in the Resident Evil world, but I don't think it is. It's kind of a distinctive universe, and it's...
Capcom, for all their crossovers, they barely ever cross their own games together.
Well, Street Fighter and Final Fight are definitely in the same universe, as well as Saturday Night Slam Masters.
Supposedly this game takes place in a region that was also in the Ace Attorney universe, yeah. But maybe you shouldn't read too much
Virginia.
Into that.
Virginia. I guess that was just a cute little nod that the translation team of Apollo Justice found, and they just ran with it.
Yeah, so the main character is Regina. You play as her, and she is a redhead special operative agent. I don't think they really go into details about, you know, the structure of this thing. But you're dispatched with your gruff and objective-orientated commander. His name is Gale, which is one of the least masculine names I think you could give a character who is very masculine, very tough. I think the other character's name is it Rick? I think it's
Rick. Yeah, it's Rick. It's Rick. He's the nicer guy of the two.
Sorry, I was trying to remember because I'm like, is it Rick? Because, you know, Rick and Morty's big, and maybe I've just, you know, gotten the names mixed up in my head.
No, it is Rick.
And there's another guy who comes along with you just to get eaten by a dinosaur immediately at the start of the game. That's not really a spoiler. It happens in the opening cutscene, so good job. No, it's not Connor. I think it's a C name, though. It's not Charlie.
Cooper.
He gets
Cooper.
Eaten. Cooper, that's right, Cooper. Detective Cooper, you've fallen so far. Immediately devoured by a dinosaur. But that happens off-screen to the other characters. He screws up his parachute. You drop onto what is called, I think it's actually called Genocide Island. I think that's literally the name of the island. I don't know.
I thought it was Iblis Island, which is like...
Is it Iblis?
Hang on, let me look this up.
Oh, maybe the Japanese translation is just Genocide, and they decided not to go with that for the English, shockingly unsurprising reason. Regardless.
Yes. Or is it Ibis?
You have the name.
Is it? It's saying...
I don't care about the island.
It's an island. I can tell you that it's the team island that they're on is called the Secret Operation Raid Team, or SORT.
Yeah, and they basically are there to collect a scientist who was suspected to be dead, but isn't dead, and also the government knew he was alive and put him on this island to do research on a thing called the Third Energy, which is, it does explain what it is in the game, but conceptually they're trying to basically, I think, beat entropy. They're basically making a device that gets energy from air, like some perfect 100% ratio or some garbage science that doesn't make any sense, which exactly describes a lot of game scientists, so that's okay. And very quickly, your team sort of splits up, and you realize that the island's covered in dinosaurs, and you have to deal with that. Although it doesn't really... kind of care all that much that it's covered in dinosaurs. They just kind of are. You know, your characters really take an island covered in dinosaurs in their stride, which I kind of think is funny. Like, Rick's like, dinosaurs, whoa! And Gale is like, I don't care. I just gotta go get the guy. We gotta go get Kirk. That's the guy's name. We just gotta go get Kirk. That's the job. I don't care about these dinosaurs. And it's... the characters are charming in their own way. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I will say that Regina has considerably more personality than any of the other Resident Evil heroes up to this point. I mean, you know, she's not... I guess she's not quite Resident Evil 4 era Leon, but, you know, she's sassy, she's smarmy.
She's so close to being a strong female character. She's so close.
What do you say they go wrong?
I think the main place they go wrong, and it's really more of a gameplay thing, for some reason, she lands on Iblis Genocide Island with a pistol and no bullets.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know why she shows up to this special agent shooting a bunch of people to extract a rogue scientist mission with a gun with no bullets. I don't know why. The two dudes both have machine guns or assault rifles or something. And I just found it so weird that she doesn't even have bullets. And that was really weird to me. Because in other games, in the Resident Evil games, 1, 2, and 3, all the characters kind of thematically start with weapons that make sense. You know, like they start with handguns and they start with ammo. And it was just quite odd that they didn't even put a cutscene or anything to explain why she, for some reason, showed up with no equipment on this mission. I guess that's kind of a nitpick, but it's It's just weird. This game is really realistic in a way that impressed me a lot. And so in doing that, one thing that kind of strikes me as extremely off, stands out. Because this game tries its absolute damnedest to fix problems that people may have perceivably had with Resident Evil. That could be the alternate title for Dino
Crisis. Yeah, I guess we should note that Shinji Mikami of Resident Evil fame was also the director of this game, so it's almost like a Resident Evil Gaiden, but it has nothing to do with that, and it's not like that Game Boy game Resident Evil Gaiden.
We should talk about what this game does different from Resident Evil real quick, because there's a lot.
Yeah, so the core of it is very important, because it is like 90% Resident Evil, you know. But that last 10% is a substantial departure from the franchise, and that's really where all of the interesting bits sort of come into play. Dinosaurs are a little smarter. They can move through doors in this one. I think they can in one of the Resident Evil games, which is kind of neat. But you'll often have the dinosaurs follow you through doorways, and they'll chase you around places. And it's not all scripted. Sometimes a dinosaur will just enter a room, and it'll be like, ah! And it'll come after you. That's pretty much the exact sound they make. Although the sound design's pretty good in this game. It's not It's not horrible. It's okay. Great music. I'm going to throw that in right now. There is some great low-key tracks. It's really well handled.
Very ambient, always keeps a sort of sense of danger about it.
Like, there's very few tracks that stand out as like, whoa, what a great track, but without the soundtrack, this game would be a lot less atmospheric, because it needs the soundtrack, because unlike the later Resident Evil games, and I guess unlike the first one, which borrows heavily from Italian films, this game is basically set in a room of boxes, with a bunch of boxes. It's a very corporate industrial building made out of cement with computers in it.
This isn't like your typical Umbrella facility where you need like 3 key credits to open up the bathroom.
No. You do need 3 credits to get into the bathroom, but you don't need 6 different medallions which correspond to several birds of prey that feast on a particular kind of rat.
Yeah, you don't need the ruby marmot statue or whatever to place in that little niche behind the bookcase. It's all a lot more straightforward in its puzzles, which aren't any less involved than they are in Resident Evil.
It is interesting. As I said, when I say realistic, I am describing it as realistic as to a PlayStation game from 1999, yeah, which does not make it Armor 2. It makes it just a pseudo-realism that I think is very compelling to experience. The puzzles are, they rely on some weird, so our key cards, you have to take the letters and decode the letters from the key card to enter the key once you have the key into the machine. It's like, that's not how real security works at all. That doesn't make any sense. But it feels almost real in a nice way that kind of like it works pretty well. And I do like that this game has a very good sense of area and world. Like, this, it never lets up feeling like you're in a real place. And the downside is that the real place is not a particularly exciting place. There is no going through a destroyed city and then through a really cool police station and then discovering an underground base or anything. No, it's just a really quite realistic facility, and if you are like me, or like a lot of people who've probably played a lot of games that constantly spiral out into the realms of implausible, the realms of complete ridiculousness, I found it very satisfying to have a game come out, and even in 1999, this was still, we were tired of it then, and we're tired of it now. This game really presents itself as, it's not quite hard science fiction, but the fact that it takes a very sort of realistic approach to the whole thing, instead of feeling very fake world, very science fiction. No, this feels almost like a plausible real world scenario, but the sci-fi elements are there with the dinosaurs and the machine that makes dinosaurs. And, it takes its best at feeling kind of realistic at a scenario which is inherently unrealistic. And I do like that. Maybe it's a bit like a Singularity or Fear. You know, those games that kind of, They spiral out of control a bit, but at the start, you feel like, yeah, this is a pretty real place that I'm currently hanging out in.
Speaking of realism, there's one other detail of this game I can appreciate. There's no health indicator, either on screen or in your inventory. You actually have to look at Regina and see how she's moving, tell how injured you are. And there's also bleeding if you take damage. I'm not sure if that can actually kill you or not.
I never risked getting killed by bleeding, but yeah, you do lose health over bleeding, and the game, unlike Resident Evil, which if you're thinking, hey, doesn't Resident Evil, do that thing? Yes, Resident Evil makes you grab your character, grabs their arm or whatever when they're pretty hurt, but this game has no health indicator. none, zip, zero. You can only go from the character's, like, look and feel. Like, and it's really cool because the character, they decided to put her on screen during all of the transition animation. So walking upstairs, opening doors. So you see a lot of Regina's ass in this game. But that aside,
I didn't think she felt very sexualized aside from that, which I appreciate.
No, she's not sexualized at all, except for the bonus costumes. And that happens. Yeah. You know, that's what you got. I mean, you can take it or leave it. You know, you don't have to use the secret costumes, and you can only get them by beating the game. So I'm okay with it. I'm sure there's no male playable character in this game at all. So, I mean, it's harder to judge, because maybe if there was a male playable character, he would have had some ridiculous shirtless outfit. Because Capcom does do that. They don't shy away from that. You get some weird costumes for the male characters, too. So, I don't know.
There's also one more gameplay element I thought was kind of neat. This game actually has, like, a rudimentary crafting system to make the various items you'll use. Like, you can grab a medicine to make your own health items and make special bullets, like tranquilizer ammo and such to put the dinosaurs to sleep, and I thought that was pretty cool.
And when you say to sleep, you mean they take a nap. You're not putting them to sleep. Unless you use the ultimate weapon of the game, the murder dot, which I can't remember the exact name, but this dot is the murder dot. It instantly kills anything in the game when you shoot it, and if you're the kind of person that, I will use the term triggered, but if the an animal basically shaking to death is something that will cause you discomfort, it will cause you discomfort because it is... That's a pretty mean weapon. The dinosaur basically seizes up and starts twitching, and then it collapses. Aww. So watch out for the murder dot, because it's not friendly, but you will probably use it towards the end of the game, because the game does throw some slightly more dangerous dinosaurs at you, and it will throw... I think it only ever throws two dinosaurs at you at once, at most. I don't think it ever throws more than two. And there's a reason, and it's this game is a pretty substantial technical powerhouse on the PlayStation.
Something that really impressed me, this game does not use pre-rendered backgrounds. It's all fully rendered 3D.
It's almost all fully rendered. I think that they're very clever, and there's a couple of pre-rendered bits in there. I'm not 100% sure, but there's definitely some bits that seem more pre-rendered. I was going to say, towards the end of the game, you go into a couple of rooms that are covered in detritus and papers and lots of, like, higher detail things that... If they did that in real time, that's very impressive texture work. But it's really great the way this game's camera angles work, because they swoop, they angle, they do a lot of things to work the environments that are given. And it really does make the game's world pop a little bit better. And that is the reason that it kind of looks a little bit bland, but they do their best to make it seem interestingly bland.
I was going to say, this is probably like one of the better-looking PS1 games I'm aware of. Aged fairly well compared to a lot of the other PS1 games at the time.
Yeah, so Tanker, I know that you have something to say about this.
Yeah, I'm going to play Devil's Advocate yet again. I will have to take the... I did think that the setting was kind of bland root in this case. I can appreciate the consistency, but, you know, if we're comparing this to Resident Evil, I'm just thinking... you know, compare, like, creaky mansions and caverns and, like, you know, abandoned police stations and sewers that lead into biolabs and whatnot. The fact that, like, 95% of Dino Crisis in comparison is just grayish hallways didn't really captivate me as much.
And the game very much is... grayish, bluish, greenish. There's a lot of issues in this game.
Yeah, if you're talking about games, like, being brown and gray, I hate to say that, for as technically good as this game looks, you know, as far as the actual backgrounds are concerned, kind of falls into that pit. So.
It is a tricky one, because it does... The fact that it looks quite... It is very well produced. You know, even when it looks bland, it looks good in terms of being bland. It has a good sense about what it wants to be. And, you know, as I said, like, I can get wholesale into this game because, for me, the fact that it's... I don't want to say it's so bland, it's so delicious, I love it, it's so bland. But more, I really like that it has such a strong and coherent, like, setting that, you know, that's really cool to me. And it's totally fair to not like that, because the flip side is that it is pretty dull, and the game doesn't do a lot of... it doesn't really push very hard to make that interesting. One thing that I think is cool is... You can turn on lasers that block dinosaurs from getting to you.
I did like the lasers. That's really neat. Yeah, that's a neat touch.
I mean, it's kind of funny to watch them bonk into the lasers.
Right, and that actually, I'm glad you brought that up. Not because it's really funny to watch them jump into the lasers repeatedly, but because the AI, it's good but not great, and that's kind of tough
to give
here.
Credit. Didn't dinosaurs actually have relatively small brains?
They say some of them have small brains, but don't think that they would run repeatedly into lasers. Like, they don't respond eventually to stop and just stare at you.
They probably have at least a Pavlovian response to pain, I'd have to assume.
At some point, they would just, like, glare at you, but they don't. And there's a couple of moments where, you know, the zombies in Resident Evil, to compare it, the zombies can be stupid as hell and you don't care.
They are more literally brainless, yeah.
And so very occasionally, you know, Dino Crisis, because it's trying to do something really impressive, occasionally it kind of fumbles that a little bit. Just like, oh, that dinosaur just did something really stupid, or it got confused and did it like 180. Nowhere near as close to the ridiculous dinosaurs of Jurassic Park Trespasser. Not even close. This is 1,000 times less stupid. And there's not many dinosaurs. That's for a dinosaur crisis, there's like 6 or 7 distinctive dinosaurs in this game. You got like Raptor, bigger Raptor, creepy guy with hands, the tiny ones that show up a couple of times, the flying ones, and of course, the T-Rex, who acts as the game's persistent, almost a nemesis-style foe who just constantly harasses you. Like, he's like just got like some really specific grudge against you. Like, it doesn't really explain why the T-Rex really hates you, but he wants to kill you and will happily eat anything and everything in his path to get you. He's a real dickhead, that one.
This is going to be tough to rank, because we don't really do many survival horror games.
I love survival horror games, so watch out.
I think the closest thing that we've done is Blue Stinger, and I'd say this is better than
Blue Stinger. I would definitely at least say that, even though Blue Stinger did have more environment variety in it. But it was also... We don't have Xerxes here, so we'll say that Blue Stinger is a bit of a sloppy game in actual gameplay.
The charm of Blue Stinger is kind of the exact opposite of Dino Crisis.
Yeah.
To me, the charm of Dino Crisis is that it is incredibly well made. This is probably very close to, on a technical level, and I mean on a technical level. Don't get me subjectives here. This is probably technically the best survival horror game maybe ever made. This might be the best one on a purely, like, programming, designed approach. It's got pretty much everything. It's got a really great, perfectly connected, logical map. It's like the mansion in Resident Evil 1, but, I don't know, like, triple in size, quadruple in size. It's got an interesting but not overly elaborate plot, good characters. You got not too many weapons, but enough to kind of feel like you have some sort of usage for them. You know, you got pistol, shotgun, a grenade weapon, and you got your darts, and you've got all this health. And there's this clever approach to saving, which is just you save in certain rooms instead of all the other things. It lets you continue if you die with no revive items, which is really kind of cute and a way of balancing that frustration of running out of saving options in the Resident Evil games. Again, they kind of tried to fix that thing. And you got this like weird item box mechanic where instead of it being generic item boxes, you have 3 distinct colors that you have to unlock using items, and they only share between the boxes. So you kind of do a little bit of a juggling act, although, again, it's just kind of to spruce things up a bit. And it's very well put together. The puzzles almost entirely make sense, which is nice. You know, like, I don't think anyone's going to be left scratching their head over these puzzles. If you can think logically, you can actually get through them. But where the game does fall apart is that it's so mechanically great, but even though it's called Dino Crisis and it's full of dinosaurs, there is something missing here. It's not like you can figure out necessarily what the absence is, but there just feels like there's a small fraction of something missing that takes this from being Dino Crisis to being, say, Resident Evil 2 or something. There's a slight element there that's like, people who play this game love it, but I don't think many of them would go, you know what, it's better than Resident Evil. I think they'd be like, yeah, but I think Resident Evil's better, and I think that's the toughest part about Dino Crisis is it lacks charm in a way that it shouldn't, but it does.
Yeah, it is, you know, a technically sound game, but I definitely don't think I'd rank it above Resident Evil 2, my favorite of the old school tank control era, or the RE make on GameCube of the first game. I'd say maybe be a bit more comparable to Nemesis, but you know something, though? We don't have any Resident Evil game on the list yet, do we?
Yeah, that's always been a tough part.
Shoot.
Here. This is actually our first proper survival horror game, because Blue Stinger has grinding and stuff, and Dino Crisis 2 actually goes in a whole action-based direction, which makes it more of a predecessor to Resident Evil 4 than this game, which is...
My only real guess on where to start is maybe somewhere on GoldenEye.
Okay.
Either way.
I think it's a very cool game, and it's a game that is super easy to recommend. If you've ever thought to yourself, I want to get into a survival horror game, but I don't really, like, I can't deal with the unrealistic elements. And by that, I mean, like, the weird puzzles and the jank that a lot of them have, because, you know, Resident Evil's a janky game. I mean, it's well-designed technically in places, but it's still a really rough experience, and Dino Crisis fits a really nice spot in that it's a great game to play. Some people say it's a very difficult game, which I think is untrue. I didn't have any trouble with it. You just have to make sure that you don't try and play it like an action game. You don't try and murder your way through everything. And that's, you know, that, you shouldn't do that in a survival horror game anyway, but like, this game will give you, like, items and stuff before you need them, so you very rarely feel like you're completely outmatched. Just, you do die pretty easy in this, but you get revival items. I think that kind of breaks the flow a little bit. So, I mean, GoldenEye is kind of... Alright, well, looking at our list, above GoldenEye...
Better than Illbleed, can we say that?
Okay.
Let me just go above... Yeah, sure. Above GoldenEye, there's Forbidden Forest, and I don't think, in my heart of hearts, I could put this game above Forbidden Forest. I don't think that it is as compellingly interesting as Forbidden Forest, which is such a odd and very forward-looking game. Dino Crisis doesn't really look forward. It actually kind of looks almost backwards. It's just kind of like, let's make the best...
Sideways. Yeah, let's say sideways.
It looks very sideways, which is interesting. Down a little bit, we have Sonic Adventure. Now,
how about between Maniac Mansion and Sonic Adventure?
You know what? I was eyeing the exact same place. I would say that maybe personally Dino Crisis is not my favorite type of game, but I can appreciate the technical accomplishments it makes over its sister series, and also the fact that its sequels are arguably kind of derailed from the feel of the original.
Let's not talk about Dino Crisis 3. Okay. Dino Crisis 2 is actually really good, it just ain't no Dino Crisis 2. Dino Crisis 1 is a very sort of... It's a subdued game about exploring a dinosaur-infested facility and getting a guy out that you need to get out, and that's the whole game, and that works so well, and it's like, there's nowhere to go with Dino Crisis, and maybe that's why they went in a weird direction.
So 2 is more like the Aliens to 1 being like Alien.
Yeah, it basically is. I think that's a very very good analogy for the...
I really wish they didn't derail so hard with 3, because it could have been a really good place to try all these new ideas.
3 skips... Yeah, 3 skips over right over Alien 3 and becomes as bad as Alien Resurrection.
Like, it's not good.
They really could have should check it out because like kind of like the testing ground of new ideas.
I just cut to a random clip in DC 3 where the player is on a jetpack and I'm just like, okay, nope. I'm out of here. It's too much.
I mean, that's...
Way over the
Certainly, move. If you like Dino Crisis, there aren't many games like Dino Crisis. There's lots of survival horror games, but there aren't many that kind of hit the exact same notes. Dino Crisis feels like a... It feels like a B-grade movie, but not a... not like one of those... not like a stupid one. It feels B-grade, not like Resident Evil, which feels like B-grade in the kind of more deliberately stupid sense, especially with what its influences were. No, this just feels like a... You know, like it's a solidly put together thing, but it doesn't quite really put itself out there. It doesn't, you know, it's not full of amazing actors. It's not full of super high budgety stuff, even though it probably cost a reasonable amount to put together in the 90s. But it doesn't have that like spectacularness. It doesn't compare it to say like Metal Gear Solid, you know, which has, even though it's set in the same facility, you know, you go outside in the snow a bunch. There's like all these like set pieces that happen. There's so much stuff and there's all these bosses and all these explosions and there's a lot of energy in that game. This game doesn't have a lot of energy. You know, it doesn't have energy. It doesn't want energy. It is really great at being what it is, and that's a really astoundingly solid 9 out of 10 game. Like, just, if you ever wanted to, like, if you were trying to set benchmarks for, like, what is a 10 out of 10 game? What is a 9 out of 10 game? What is a 7 out of 10 game? This game would be, like, Dino Crisis. If it's about, like, Dino Crisis, it's a 9 out of 10.
Yeah, I feel that Dino Crisis is definitely a sleeper hit of the Twilight PS1 era. And there were a lot of damn good games being released for PS1 just before the PS2 hit. I almost feel that there are too much that this one almost got lost in the shuffle, but it still retains something of a fan base today. So I'd say, yeah, definitely recommend everyone check this one out, especially if they're a Resident Evil fan. They'd be doing themselves a disservice otherwise.
So we've got it. We're either putting it above or below Maniac Mansion is the current...
I would say below.
And if you two both think it should go below, then I am outmoted.
I'm going to say below. And I'm going to say below also, but better than Sonic Adventure, sure.
I'm okay with that.
All right, so it goes in at number 58, I believe, between Maniac Mansion and Sonic Adventure. Dino Crisis. Spectacularly great game, falling just short of being, an all-time classic. Just barely. Great game, though. Clever puzzles. I don't want to talk about the puzzles, because I actually want you to play it and solve them, because you probably won't need a guide. good game. I hope you guys enjoyed playing it, and I hope anyone that plays in the future enjoys playing it. Dang, that show was riveting. We have just blown our way through whatever games we talked about, and we said a lot about those games. But the great news is it doesn't have to stop at just those two games. If you're donating to us on Patreon, and I think it's about $2 to donate to us on Patreon for this, you would be listening to a third review here. Review, criticism, ranking, all of those things. And we would be looking at Bejeweled, a game that I don't think anyone ever wanted us to actually talk about, but I bet you want to hear it, and that will be available right now if you're listening to us through our Patreon. Otherwise, this recording will end, and you'll have to wonder what you missed, and I bet we talked a lot about the jewel-falling extravaganza that basically ruined video gaming forever. What an exciting game. So you should definitely check us out there. And you get other bonuses. I believe you can get books and things. I'm not the usual guy, so I have no idea what I'm saying here. But I hope you'll give to us on HG Patreon, or HG101 Patreon. Alright, see you on the other side. That's all for this episode of Hardcore Gaming 101 Top Games Podcast. Special thanks goes out to OKUSA on iTunes, at PaddleMari on Twitter, and at WhoosierDave0 for nominating those games, and thanks to those of you who we didn't get to yet, we will be getting to you soon. Thanks as well to my lovely co-hosts and co-patriots, our editor Jeff Rood, our theme song composer Muteki, our technical assistant, video editor, and script writer Bobinator, and of course the support and feedback of listeners like you. You can support this podcast by making a small monthly donation at patreon.com/HG101, by subscribing to the HG101 YouTube channel, and by following at GSignNX and at HG_101 on Twitter. You can also enter our Shady Den of Depravity Discord at bit.ly/HGDiscord. But most importantly, help us claw our way into the podcasting firmament by hitting on iTunes, subscribing to HG101, and giving us a 5-star review. Do it, or we'll review every single last knockoff of Power Stone ever made. See you in 2022! Until next week, keep keeping it real.